What is up? Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome to Weekend Kickoff. Steve Geller, Mike Dottigliere, getting you ready for week one of college football action. I thought would be the dominant talk today, Mike.
Not today.
And we got a big trade in the NFL. Another superstar leaving Dallas. Micah Parsons now getting traded to the Green Bay Packers. Haven't seen official compensation in return that Dallas is getting, but Parsons inking a mega contract extension with the Packers.
Yeah, and I've seen reports that it's at least two first-round picks.
At least.
We'll see what else is included in there. But three-time All-Pro Micah Parsons, who has played 4 years in the NFL, leaves Dallas to go to Green Bay. And that's all the Packers need, man. They loaded up front, too. Now they got Micah. And Micah signs a deal where he becomes the highest paid non-quarterback in the history of the National Football League. T.J. Watt had that honor. He was getting $41 million. Micah is going to average $47 million a year. $188 million contract. The guarantee is in the, what, 138 range? Or 120, fully guaranteed on that contract. And, again, as soon as we get the final details of that of the compensation, will give it to you, but we have seen reports of at least two first-round picks. But, man, you know where the Packers are going to end up? That's almost in the second round. You throwing him in that mix, and they got a really good defense to begin with. Let's see if Jordan Love can turn the engine over on the car and get it rolling. Man, that's a huge trade. But you could see, and I said this 2 days ago, this was almost to the point of no return.
Yeah, you did. You called it, Mike.
Because I'd had enough people tell me this isn't good between Jerry and Micah and his agent, and that this is going to end up that he's going to get rid of him. And sure enough, about 15 minutes ago, it broke. Micah Parsons traded from Dallas to the Green Bay Packers. In exchange, we know it's at least two first-round picks. We'll give you the full details when we get it. It's a four-year, $188 million deal.
Cha-ching.
$120 fully guaranteed for Micah Parsons, which makes him the highest-paid guy. And this is all Micah Parsons did in 4 years. He was a four-time Pro Bowler, three-time All-Pro. He was a Defensive Rookie of the Year. He had 52.5 sacks in 4 years, 9 forced fumbles, and 4 fumble recoveries.
And what do you know, Mike? Week 4 of the NFL season, Sunday Night Football.
Hey, guess who's playing?
Green Bay and Dallas facing off.
Listen, I didn't have high hopes for the Cowboys this year. Again, you don't know anything about a first-year head coach. First time he's ever been a head coach. How many games are they going to win? You know, they had trouble in defense last year with Michael. What are they going to do without him? Man, I'm just telling you, Steve, this ain't a good deal for the Cowboys.
Small update here, Mike. Adam Schefter putting out sources. Trade package includes those two first-round picks and a front-line player, whatever that means.
Yeah, man, I'd have thought it'd cost you more than that. To be honest, man, I might have jumped in myself if I was another team, if that's all it cost me. So, we got Rodney Hill. Why don't you introduce him, Steve, and we'll talk a little bit about the treasure chest. And as soon as we get details on that trade with Micah Parsons going from Dallas to Green Bay, we'll give it to you right here on the Big 870 WWL.
Yeah, Ronnie, definitely welcome on in. Thanks, as always, for having us here at the Treasure Chest.
We needed to have Micah Parsons oversee. Okay? It takes a big deal like that to get over the top of you, Ronnie. It's just the way it is.
There you go. I'm a good fill-in right there.
So. Are you a Cowboy fan?
No.
Okay.
Not even close.
I was just checking. Because sometimes they got them, you know, closet Cowboy fans. And they don't tell you until they start talking about it.
I'm who dad all the way through. So anything to do with Dallas, not even close.
Boo, right down with Dallas.
Yeah.
Boo. Man, I was telling you this, Rodney, ahead of time, that, I pick up the paper the other day. Front page. Bang. Treasure Chest, and about
are.
The success here of the Treasure Chest on the front page of the Advocate Times Picayune, and they had a elderly lady. She's in her 80s, and she had been a regular here. And she was like, "Oh, I love the new Treasure Chest now. Only bad thing, I can't find a place to sit because they got so many people here." Hey, that's as good an advertisement as you can get, Rodney, right there.
No, she's you know, everybody's having a good time with it. You know, it's hard to believe it's been a year.
Yeah.
You know, we're June of last year, so, I mean, here going into September, you know, we're circling in on that calendar year. But it's been a great year. You know, everything the article said has just been we got plenty of slots, plenty of tables. Everybody's been having a good time.
Come on, you know she got a favorite spot. You know damn well. They all of them, you know, man, I got a favorite spot. Somebody's in my seat. Man, I sat one time at the Silver Slipper when we were doing a show. And, man, I sit there, and the lady was, hey, I normally sit there.
Oh, okay. You're in my spot.
Okay, you just came in 15 minutes ago, hon.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of killing time. All right, I get it. But,
yes.
Yeah, Treasure Chest 2 here. And, you know, I tell everybody, it was like, man, how good. I said, man, it is really nice. It is so clean in comparison to other casinos. It is well lit. Everything's done. Super great restaurants. You can, you know, if you want to game a little bit, and you know, put money on a game, you can come right here to it. And everything's set up so well, Rodney. Y'all have done a terrific job. The most impressive part of that article was you guys are getting almost 90,000 people a month to come here. And in comparison, it was 47,000 a month.
A lot of new faces, We're the right place to come to, you know, if you're looking to have a good time with slot machines, like you said, food, table games, entertainment. You know, it's a local place. So a lot of the familiar faces, you know, repeat customers coming again and again to kind of support that. But, you know, there's a lot more that, you know, haven't tried us, and we're looking forward to welcoming them in and experiencing us for the first time. We got a lot of promotions, a lot of good slot machines. You know, we're not satisfied. We're wanting always to make sure we have the best slot product available. We're always bringing in new games. We got
y'all got a variety of it too.
Variety of new games. And they're always coming out new ones. We got a big Wheel of Fortune game coming up soon. That's kind of going to have the best and brightest opportunities to win and play and just be excited about that. Table games are always changing, putting different additional bets. We got a few jackpot bonuses up to 200,000+ that are ready to hit. They're ready to hit, and looking forward to welcoming that person and cheering them on. But
last couple weeks, I've had people, you know, because it's not a far drive from where I live on the Bayou to Kenner. Okay, it's about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, so they were like, man, I haven't been there since they were on the boat. Man, I'm going to have to go see y'all on Thursday night. So, yeah, come on by. I was like, man, you're going to love it here. I mean, it is so well done. It's all laid out super, great restaurants, places to eat. You want to watch the ball game. And so one of the ladies was like, I don't want to say too much of that because my husband's going to hang out on there 24-7 then with all the TVs you're talking about.
Those recliners next to the sports book is perfect.
Yeah.
You can get very comfortable in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we'll bring you food, we'll bring you drinks, and before you know it, you know, the game's over with and there's a next game coming on. So
for sure.
I've seen a lot of people there for a while and getting comfortable. but no, I mean, new faces, we have, we're starting pretty much soon. Any new guest who signs up, you know, anything up to $300 in losses, we'll give them the opportunity to play that back. So, I mean, it's a good opportunity to just come and try us.
Okay, know? Steve, go get your luck in there. Go sign up to get that $300.
There you go, yeah.
Cause you know, that $300, that's going to swish through your hands quickly.
I'll let the wifey handle that for sure. She's got
come
the good
on,
luck.
Steve.
She's
go.
Definitely got the good luck.
Oh, okay, then.
You
got
to start there. Yes.
Right. Well, wait a minute. Now, you're spoiling the surprise. He's going to give you the $300 back. So if you're not a good player here.
Let her play both. Yeah.
There you go, right. But, man, it really is super here. And like I said, it's so convenient to get to. My thing about it, too, the parking. And a lot of times, because, you know, people, you get a certain age, it's hard when you got to park far away and kind of walk. Man, you right there.
Yeah.
You right there to walk. And so.
And if you want, they even got valet.
Yeah. So the best part was last week, man, I passed in the front. I was going to park up front, and all of them were taken. So I pulled into the second deal. And that was an elderly woman. She was older than me, and she saw me walk, and she was like, do you want me to back up so you can park here? I was like, no, honey, it's just like three more steps for me. I'm good right here. But, man, the parking's right there. You can get to it. And like I said, man, to see this place, how it has progressed, and to read that article, it's really a fantastic thing for not only the Treasure Chest, but also for the city of Kenner.
Yeah,
what
no,
it means to the city.
As the article said, it's win-win. You know, it's a winning opportunity for the city, for the area. for our guests, you know, a good place. And I mean, everybody's looking for an escape, a good time to just have fun and kind of relax. And we do everything possible to make sure that comes into play. You know, unwind, relax, have a good time. You know, get some food, take a break, watch some games in here. You know, this exciting time, we've talked about it many times of, you know, when football comes back, you know, the city kind of, you know, just gets invigorated. And it's a different
jump of
atmosphere.
Cables.
Oh, yeah.
It is here.
It's the jump of cables.
And, you know, with Saturday coming up with LSU, you know, this place takes a whole different feel. The excitement, and that's what I love about it. You know, we had the sports book back at the old property, and it was separated from the casino. But when LSU scores and everybody starts cheering, you can hear it across the whole casino. And
gets everyone
just,
excited, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it just brings everything together, and, you know, we all have fun with it.
I have a neighbor. He came here for the first time 2 weeks ago. Didn't come visit us on Thursday, but he says he will. He came on a Saturday, so he watched some of the preseason games. He was like, Mike, I'm going to tell you something about when LSU and Tulane play. You don't care if they win. You got to cover the spread.
Yeah.
That's the important thing. You got to cover the spread.
You got to play right.
Man, this is fantastic. A great venue. And, again, if you living outside the Kenner, Metairie, New Orleans area, if you're in the River Parish or Lafourche, Terrebonne, it's a short drive here, and it's well worth your drive.
Yeah, we say we're just around the corner. Because,
and that's true.
Around that, yeah, it's, you know, it's a 10-minute drive from a lot of places around here. You know, so it's a quick and easy get to, and now with the parking, you're in. And we're excited about that. You know, one of the things, our steakhouse, I think it's kind of a hidden gem right now. You know, it's still not kind of out there, and we would love people to come try it because, you know, when you're talking about Kenner, pretty much the only steakhouse in Kenner.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you even look at Metairie, Kenner area and, you know, River Parishes, that's a great spot that I think a lot of people need to try out. You know, we have some chefs in there that are just doing some just different stuff that's been amazing. And a lot of opportunities in there to come
Rodney,
just have a good time.
Y'all did it right. Y'all did it right here.
We think so.
As the treasure says so. Come on down and visit us. We'll be here every Thursday during the football season other than Thanksgiving. Steve and I will be here. But, man, they got, if you love gaming, want to watch some of the games, put a little money on it, great steakhouse, other things, come on down here to the treasure chest.
Just around the corner.
Just around the corner.
Rodney
thank you,
Miller, thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Director of marketing here at the treasure chest. Taking a break. We'll be back with more of Sports Talk after this at the Treasure Chest Casino right after this on WWL. Who dat? Back here on Sports Talk, and definitely the big news of the day is Green Bay Packers getting Micah Parsons from the Dallas Cowboys. Full compensation now in that we know the Dallas Cowboys get Kenny Clark, defensive tackle, and two first-rounders from Green Bay. And meanwhile, the Packers end up with Micah.
Okay, I'm a big fan of Kenny Clark. He's 29 years old. So you got a 29-year-old defensive tackle and two first-round picks for Micah Parsons. The way I look at it, man, the Packers got the better part of this deal to get that type player. Now, you got to pay him, and that's a lot of money. You're talking about $47 million, but all you have to do is give up two first-round picks and Kenny Clark.
Yeah.
The problem with other teams is, would you have the cap room to do it? See, I think other teams would have jumped in too, but maybe they didn't have that cap room to get in Micah Parsons.
We're taking a break here on Sports Talk, and we'll be back with Saints legend Drew Brees. So stay tuned right after this on WWL. Who dat? We're back here on Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino, and happy to be welcomed in one of our favorites, the great Drew Brees, legendary quarterback of the black and gold, leading them to a Super Bowl title, joining us here on WWL right now. Drew, how's it going, man?
Doing great. How you guys doing?
Doing great. Drew, have you tell us a story? I've heard it before about when things weren't going to work out with San Diego and the Chargers, and then Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis brought you in. This is like, what, 5.5, 6 months after Katrina. And, you know, I know you lived in Texas and then you went to Purdue, but just to see the devastation that had happened with Katrina, you could see it on TV, but it's nothing like seeing it in person. It was almost shocking, even for people that lived here, to see what had happened at that time.
I mean, it was devastating. You know, I mean, I think like most natural disasters, you know, wherever you are and you're watching it on TV, it just pales in comparison to what the reality is for the people that are going through it. But I think I certainly can remember that moment as Katrina was happening. And we had my college roommate and his wife were living in New Orleans at the time. So we did have even more of a connection than just, hey, this is one of our American cities. This is, you know, happening to the people, you know, right here in this country. But, you know, we had friends that we were close to that were, you know, all of a sudden evacuating, and, you know, we're trying to track them down and all that stuff while all this is happening. But you still have no idea the reality of it until, you know, we actually step foot, you know, into New Orleans, you know, at a time when, you know, obviously I never thought in my wildest dreams that we would be there, you know, and I'd be in free agency, and, you know, the New Orleans Saints would be courting me, you know, during that time. But yeah, the reality of it became very real, you know, on that visit.
True. One of the great stories, and you've said it before, about you trying to get to the dome on the opening when the dome was reopened, Saints playing the Falcons, and the job you had to just to get there, because every avenue was sort of jammed. I think people wanted to get there ahead of time. It was such a big event. It showed, I think, everybody across the region and also the country, hey, we're going to rebuild this back. But you got an adventure just trying to get to the dome that day when you guys were going to play the Falcons on Monday night.
Yeah, look, I'm such a creature of habit, and especially on game day. You know, I mean, my schedule is just down to the second. And, I mean, I remember we were staying at the Airport Hilton Hotel at the time, you know, which is about as far away from the dome as you could get. But, you know, that's kind of the best we could do. That's where we, that's where they put us up. And so, you know, I thought, hey, I'm trying to get to the game 3 hours ahead of time. So I'm going to leave literally 4 hours ahead of the game to get there, and, thinking, hey, I'll give myself an hour to get there. Well, you know, I went down Airline Drive and then cut up to I-10, and I-10 was just jam packed. And so I said, well, I'll go back down to Airline. And I went back down to Airline, and Airline was jam packed. So I went back up to I-10. I mean, look, I didn't know all the shortcuts at that time. I had only been a resident for, you know, a few months, and had only been to the dome one time before. And that was literally 2 days previous. Cause if you recall, obviously we didn't play any preseason games there. And the first time we had a chance to actually step foot in the dome was for a practice that was 2 days before the game. So next thing I know, I mean, I'm in the car for 2 hours and I'm sweating bullets. Cause I'm sitting here going, this is the biggest game of my life, of our lives, of the city's lives. And I'm about to be late to this game. I mean, it's like your worst nightmare for that to happen. And, at the very least, you're supposed to be in the locker room 2 hours before game time. And I was sitting there, and it was like I'd already passed that threshold. And I'm sitting there staring at the Poydras exit off of I-10. And I got to a point where I actually thought, can I park my car on the shoulder and start running down the ramp to get into the dome at the time? And just I was thinking how ridiculous that would look, that the starting quarterback of the Saints is literally running down the ramp in order to get into the dome. But I was like, all right, just hanging there. And finally we got down the ramp, and I'm jumping curbs in order to get there. And then I was driving an old Land Rover Defender 90 at the time that had a Safari roof rack on the top. And I got into the garage, but then I hit one of those water pipes, those steel water pipes that hang down. And my car screeched to a halt. I had sparks flying. I literally spun that thing out of the garage. And then I threw the keys to the security guard and literally said, hey, man, please take care of this for me, as I went sprinting in the locker room. And it was all that happened before that game.
That's an unbelievable story. I told this story to Zach Street before, and he said, Mike, I can't believe it, but if I wouldn't have been here, I know it's true. I had numerous people that had lived in New Orleans, lost everything. So they were relocated now. And so, you know, you get on the phone with them, or they were coming back to see about things here. And the first question out of their mouth wasn't about, man, you know, I lost everything, and, you know, what am I doing, everything else. The thing is, man, are the Saints for real this year? I can't believe this team is that good. And it was so funny that for many people was the outlet. Okay, it gave them the outlet that it was something good happening in their life. But I told Zach, I'm not kidding you.
I had this happen at least 6 to 7 times with people who lived there, and I know they lost everything. But their main concern wasn't the house or anything else. Man, what about the Saints? And that was an unbelievable ride. So you 3 or 4 games into the season, and you're like, okay, kind of pinch me a little bit. Is this really happening? And I know we had Scott Shanley on yesterday, and he was like, we really played sort of over our heads that year. We really did. But we saw what it meant to the region.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. That was such a crazy off season, because obviously we were, you know, Sean Payton just arrived and he was assembling this group of free agents and a lot of guys that obviously saw this as more of a calling than it was just, you know, a job as a football player. And so as we assembled this group, I mean, look, it was kind of a ragtag bunch, you know, in the beginning. And obviously, you know, so much of that offseason was spent away from the building because, you know, they were still trying to kind of, you know, renovate our facility and the National Guard was still operating out of it. And, you know, we went to Millsaps College for training camp and it was, you know, certainly one of the toughest training camps anybody ever gone through and probably took years off guys' lives. But, you know, it definitely kind of broke us down in order to build this back up as a team. But I don't know if you remember that preseason. I mean, it was dreadful. You know, we went up to Shreveport and just got absolutely destroyed by the Cowboys. And then we went played a home game at Jackson Memorial Stadium in Jackson and got destroyed by the Colts, who obviously went on and won the Super Bowl. But nonetheless, you know, I think there were times during that offseason where we kind of looked at each other and like, man, I'm not sure if we're going to win a game. You know, I mean, it was that dreary at times, you know, but I also knew what always kept us getting up in the morning and putting one foot in front of the other was just knowing how much we could have an impact on all the not just the rebuilding efforts, but the psyche, you know, the psyche of our fan base and of the community. And we knew how much they were counting on us and how much we needed to put our best foot forward for them. And also that was a great source of strength for us, you know, and it was like every step of the way, we just got better and better and stronger and stronger. And with each victory through that season, you know, we go to Cleveland, we get that victory 19-14 against the Browns, you know, and kind of a weird game. And then we go up to Green Bay, who was pretty good and start the game off terrible with 3 turnovers, then end up beating Favre and those guys up there, the previous division winners, you know, in the fourth quarter. And then we came back home for the reopening of the Dome. And then after that, it was like, man, I think we can beat anybody.
Drew, you've had a ton of special moments in the Superdome. You mentioned there the reopening of the Superdome. And when that Steve Gleason blocked punt happened, you could just feel fans, you know, unjust leashing their emotions and all their frustrations and that joy in that moment in the Superdome. What do you remember best about that?
Well, the Steve Gleason block punt will be the greatest play in the history of this organization. You know, funny for me is I didn't see it. I heard it. You know, for me, I was at the other end of the field and, you know, we're obviously in a situation where we're expecting to return a punt. So I'm down at the other end and I'm more, you know, focusing on, okay, what are the opening plays here? What am I expecting? You know, what are my answers if they do this or do that? You know, so I'm just very much locked in and focused on my job. And I hear what sounds like a shotgun blast, and then my eyes go up to the screen and then to the field, and here we are returning that block punt for a touchdown. I see Steve running around, and you know, I mean, it's just one of those moments like what in the world just happened? But I've never heard the Superdome as loud as that moment, and I know many a Houdat, you know, Nation faithful who have been in that dome on a lot of big moments would say the same.
Drew, I'll throw it to you, Saints this year, your expectations for this team. Bobby and I have talked about this, Drew, and just, I mean, you can't tell a lot from preseason because to me, that's a big mirage sometimes. But I think front seven defensively, this team had always taken a lot
of confidence that they could stop somebody's running game. And I think that's still a huge part of the NFL college football today. Getting Davin Godshaw, and I think they're a better team up front, that front seven. And I really think that I think is a major positive for this team in a rebuilding process, because we know the offense with some different things kind of here and there, that will take a little bit of time. But defensively, I think their ability to stop the run is going to be better than what we've seen the last 2 years. And that's really been disappointing. You can't give up 5 yards of pop in this league. You can't do it.
Yeah, look, I think we've prided ourselves a lot on stopping the run, especially over the last 7-8 years. And we've got veteran guys, you know, leaders that have been a part of this and really the core part of this for a long time, DeMario Davis, Cam Jordan. I think we've drafted really well. And we've got pieces in place and depth in place on the defensive side of the ball and guys that are hungry and ready to make a name for themselves. Look, offensively, I think we have as good an offensive line as anybody in the league. We have explosive receivers outside. We've got one of the most dynamic running backs in the league. So you'd say, really, you know, hey, the thing you're waiting to see is how does the quarterback position perform, right? For guys that are just young and don't have a lot of experience. I think Spencer Rattler is extremely talented, and he can make all the throws, and he can make a lot of plays outside the pocket as well. I think what you're just hoping for is that he can continue to grow and develop and understand, hey, what really wins and loses games in this league, and how do we put ourselves in the best position to win, you know, each and every Sunday, given the fact that we're going to have a defense that's going to take pride in stopping the run. We've got the ability to run the football ourselves and the ability to make some explosive plays. But at this point, like, who in the division really scares you? Nobody scares me in the division. You know, Tampa's got the edge because they've been the division winner the last couple of years, and they've got the most veteran quarterback. But other than that, I mean, who really worries you? I think this whole division is wide open. I think the Saints are flying under the radar, and I think that's a good place to be right now.
True. One thing I always wanted to ask you, and I don't think we've ever brought this up in the conversation, Tracy Porter's interception in the end zone. Did you see that play and how it transpired? You know, because I saw Peyton throw that pass so many times to Reggie Wayne, and either that or to Marvin Harrison. It was one of the two. And he used that same sort of pattern a lot. But where were you kind of watching that play? Because it looked as though Tracy had saw it on film, kind of jumped the route, was able to get it, and go in for the score.
Yeah, so I was on the sideline, and again, you know, I was in my own head thinking about, I was planning a 2-minute drive. Because here we are, we're up 24-17, 3 minutes left, and I'm assuming, hey, it's Peyton Manning, and they're going to go down, they're going to score a touchdown, and then we're going to get the ball back with a minute and change, and we're going to have to go down and find a way to kick a field goal to beat them. And so in my mind, I'm just sitting there rehearsing a 2-minute drive in my head. And then same thing, you know, you just hear the eruption of the crowd, and you look up, and there's Tracy Porter running on the field with the ball. So in talking with him, talking with all of our DBs and everything, to your point, that was a route that they just studied. You know, obviously that Colts offense was one of the best of all time. And, but yeah, they have tendencies just like everybody else. And our guys would tell you, man, they saw that tendency, that release pattern, that situation, and just knew, hey, this is what's coming. And Tracy did a heck of a job of trusting those instincts and jumping it and making that play.
Back-to-back, does it against Favre, and then bang, does it against Peyton Manning. The news broke a little over an hour ago, but, man, how about the Packers getting Micah Parsons Ooh-wee. From the Cowboys? They gave up 2 first-round picks. Kenny Clark, Kenny's played in this league for a few years. He's 29 years old now. But, you know, a lot of people were, the Eagles are going to be difficult to beat in the NFC. They look like they got the ride here. Man, with the Packers getting Micah Parsons, he ain't no regular guy on the street now. There ain't a lot of guys that can rush the quarterback and make cause havoc like Micah Parsons can. That's a huge, huge trade for Green Bay to get him.
Well, all my Packers buddies texted me the minute that happened. They were like, This feels like the Reggie White trade. So I can tell you how excited they are. Look, he's a difference maker. There's no question. I had no idea what happened in Dallas to make that thing fall apart like that. But, you know, obviously he's got a lot to prove. And he just seems like one of those guys who's highly competitive and takes a lot of pride in what he does and how people perceive him. So I imagine he's going to have a monster year, and hopefully that works out for both sides. Look, the Cowboys are getting a ton of picks and a great player in Kenny Clark. We'll see. We'll obviously see how this thing plays out. But, yeah, that's a pretty shocking movement here, you know, to start this season.
Drew, looking at you, we're going to be up for first ballot Hall of Fame. We're expecting to hear your name and definitely looking forward to that when that happens. I know you've got to be anxious for next season when that all comes about.
We lost them there.
Unfortunate that our connection there with Drew ends up dropping out. But yeah,
great stuff.
I think, Mike, that's a slam dunk right there for Drew being a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Him, Larry Fitzgerald.
Ding, ding.
Okay,
easy peasy, right?
They shouldn't have the Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame, if those two guys don't get in year one. Man, Drew was unbelievable as a player. I hope I live long enough to see another quarterback in the black and gold that can perform
right,
like what Drew could. And, man, Larry Fitzgerald, you talk about a guy, okay, he rarely kind of beat the chest. He was unlike the diva receivers
exactly
you see
today. Exactly what I was going to say, right?
In the NFL. Man, Larry did everything quiet, but, man, he just would eat you alive as a route runner, get open, and then every once in a while he hits the big play. You know what always I think of that? Super Bowl Sunday they playing against the Steelers, and I was watching a game with Joe Clark, my neighbor, and Joe's like, watch, it's going over the middle of Larry Fitzgerald. I was like, okay, sure enough, he hits him, Larry runs it in. Now Pittsburgh able to come back and win the game,
right?
But Joe made the call right before the snap, and man, Larry, I think is an unbelievable player. So is Drew, deserves to get in. And the other guy, too, I don't know how he didn't get in this year, Luke Kuechly.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he didn't play 15 years in the NFL, but Drew, last time we had him on 2 weeks ago, made the comment, the best football player I ever played against.
That's huge praise, right.
For him to say that. No, Luke Kuechly belongs in Pro Football's Hall of Fame, along with Drew Brees, Larry Fitzgerald.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We'll be back with even more at the Treasure Chest Casino after this on WWL. Wrapping up the first hour of Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Next hour, we'll be joined by Jen Hale, NFL on Fox reporter. Also, Paul Sonnier, creator of Our City of Saints musical. Talking to him about that. Stay tuned here on WWL, Treasure Chest Casino, Sports Talk. Weekend kickoff edition, folks. Be right back. What's up, folks? Welcome back into Sports Talk, our special weekend kickoff edition at the Treasure Chest Casino. We're here every Thursday getting ready for that NFL season and happy to welcome in Jen Hale, NFL on Fox reporter. Jen, thanks so much for the time. Who knew it was going to be such a crazy day?
Yeah, Jen.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Jen. Give us your first thoughts. The Packers, the youngest team in the NFL. Now they add another star player to the lineup in 26-year-old Micah Parsons.
The Packers just upped their franchise value for another 10 years. They received a major cornerstone piece on defense. That is going to pay huge dividends down the line. And it made me stop and think, boy, this is the player empowerment era truly coming full circle in the NFL. I think Jerry Jones thought he could control this situation, thought that it was 5-10 years ago when he could bully a player into a franchise tag. That's the way it was then. This is a sign of the times. Everything you're seeing in the NBA, the portal, how it's changing college, player choice, player empowerment is alive and well, especially in the NFL, which was probably the last bastion of it. And not only did Micah Parsons get the trade he wanted, but guys, he got paid, the highest non-paid quarterback in the league, $188 million over 4 years. This is a trade. This is a move that's going to change the landscape, not just the Packers, but the NFL landscape, I think, for years to come.
And you didn't go to a lousy team. Chin, you're going to a team that could legitimately play on Super Bowl Sunday.
100%.
I really think the Packers are that good.
I think they could be. I want to see them in regular season. I want to see them not in pajama football. But I love what Jordan Love's doing. I love that coaching staff. It's an innovative offense, and adding Micah Parsons to defense, you know, he's a fifth-year guy, so he's still young in his career, but he's old enough. He's going to set the tone. He's going to establish the standard. He's going to be the locker room guide, certainly for the defense, if not for the entire squad. It is a huge move for the Packers, and like I said, I think you're going to see the ripple effects on this team, but also on the NFL, with him being able to dictate where he wanted to go and getting paid for it. That's just tremendous.
Jen, the news came out this week. The Saints are going to start Spencer Rattler at quarterback. Talked about this before, that I sort of see this scenario similar to what happened in New England last year when they went with Jacoby Brissett early. And I think it was either the fifth or sixth game. Then they turned and round and gave the baton to Drake May. He struggled early on, but he looked like a totally different guy at the end of the year throwing the football. And I sort of think the same situation will happen here, but Spencer gets the early nod. Your thoughts on Rattler and how that will play out for the Saints in an offense that, you know, nobody shows you a lot in preseason, but, man, I can't tell you how this offense is going to look for the Saints in 2025.
I can, Mike. It's going to be a rebuilding year.
I couldn't figure that one. Come on.
You're not going to be lighting up scoreboards, but that's okay. It is what it is. The Saints have kicked the can down the road for so long. You got to go through this. Every team goes through this at some point, and now it's the Saints' turn. I love the decision to start Rattler. He is the more prepared quarterback. He's the more seasoned signal caller, even though that seasoning isn't a great deal of seasoning. It's more than Shook has. He knows what live NFL bullets look like. Let Shook cook. Let Shook develop. And, yeah, I do think we're going to see Shook later in the season. Number one, I think he could end up being the better quarterback with a little time and a little experience under his belt. Number two, you've got a tremendous quarterback draft class coming up in the upcoming year. So what the Saints need to decide is, do we have our guy for the future, or is this a Band-Aid to get us through until we use another top pick on another quarterback? And that's going to be, to me, the biggest decision of Kellen Moore's young career, absent of some sort of crazy franchise injury.
Jen, in Atlanta, and you did the preseason games for the Falcons. Michael Penix did not take one snap. Then McGarry goes down with a big injury for them because, you know, he had been a staple along that offensive line. Their defense, I mean, they got some new pieces there. We'll see how all that comes together. But, you know, and I know they have a little bit more certainty than the Saints, but that's a lot of question marks about the Falcons too.
You know, I feel like for 3 years we've been saying, wow, they're the sleeper team, certainly in the NFC South. They've got this great piece. They've got that great piece. They've got Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson. They do. They have some fantastic pieces. And the theory going into this season is, look, you needed a quarterback to pull it all together, and you needed at least a better defense, somebody that didn't let the other offense just run away with things. Their defense has a ton of depth, so much depth. Mike, tell me how you would have liked this when you played. Their defensive line coach, Nate Ollie, he is committing to rotating his defensive linemen every four snaps, you know, as long as the hurry up allows. They have so much depth there. He wants to keep them fresh. It's a defense that's going to give up points, but it's going to get takeaways in theory and put the ball back in the hands of its offense. The one place you brought up, Caleb McGarry, the one place to me they could not afford an injury was on that O-line. That was their thinnest position. So many new faces already on that squad, on that line. Players changing positions. Caleb McGarry is going to be incredibly hard to replace. They already had a new starting center, Ryan Neuzel, which, you know, a competent, cool, calm, seasoned starting center is so huge for a younger, newer quarterback. So this is going to be a tough test for Michael Penix. And I think if opposing defensive lines can get to him and put pressure on him, which it sounds like with this O-line is going to be the case, I think it could be a long breaking in period for him.
Jen, we've heard a lot about Kyle Pitts this offseason. I feel like that happens almost every other year as well. Should we expect a breakout year, I guess, from him to finally live up to his draft status?
Steve, it's a great question. And I would say this year more so than other years because it's a contract year. And don't we always see players find another level when their paycheck is on the line? So Kyle Fitz knows he's underachieved. He was very involved in camps and OTAs, putting in extra work. From that perspective, I liked what I saw from him. Can he get on the field and prove it when the whistle blows? That's the big question. He really loves working with Michael Penix. He seems to have a great connection with him. They've put in a lot of time in the offseason. To me, the offensive line and Kyle Pitts are what that season hinges on, assuming Michael Penix is what people think he was from the three games he started last season.
Jen, we kind of got sidetracked early with this because of the Parsons deal, but want to bring back, I know New Orleans is your home. You've always loved the city, even though, you know, you live somewhere else, grew up, you know, out in Alabama. But your thoughts on Katrina, because you were at that time, we didn't know one another, but you were working for MSNBC. So you had to give me back the information. I thought you were somewhere else, but you were working for MSNBC. You were sent to the Mississippi Gulf Coast because it was coming in there, and that's exactly where it came in. And then you were sent to the city. Just to see that the first time is, even for people that lived here, it was shocking. But you covered it from as Katrina is fixing to roll into Mississippi, and then it rolled into what happened when the levees broke in New Orleans.
One of the defining moments of my adult life, sure. I think so many people feel that way. I've just always been in my blood, as my mother says. It's always been home for me. I was working for MSNBC, and they sent me down to where the eye was supposed to make landfall, and indeed, in Biloxi. So we got there, you know, in the beginning, Katrina, another hurricane in theory, right? Before the worldwide media was when the levees broke. So we got some of the very last shots of that Mississippi Gulf coastline before it was annihilated and wiped out. And I will never forget, after everybody had boarded up and evacuated, it was me and a videographer who's still a dear friend, walking the beach, taking video of all those old homes, old structures, never imagining in 10 hours it would all be gone. I'd never experienced or seen anything like it, certainly not in person, which always hit so much harder. We were there for 2 or 3 days. I can remember NBC sending supplies into us by boat because the interstate was all torn up. You couldn't drive supplies in yet. And then, of course, the levees failed in New Orleans and all hell broke loose. The man-made disaster that threatened to wipe out the city. You know, I think everyone remembers there were lawmakers nationally who didn't want to rebuild, who wanted to surrender the city. And that's what galvanized so many of us to fight for what we loved. So although it was a tremendously difficult assignment, literally you're watching coffins wash up, you're seeing the animals trapped on roofs that you can't help. By the time I got here to New Orleans from Mississippi, most people had been removed from the roofs, but the animals were still there. Seeing what was happening inside the convention center and the Superdome, I won't even say it was a third world country. It was a horror movie. Very difficult and very proud of this city and this population for overcoming it and putting their foot down and saying, not only are we going to come back, but we're going to come back better and stronger. We're going to use this opportunity to revamp our education system. We're going to use this to set a new business standard. And of course, we still have a long ways to go. We are certainly not there yet, but I think that was the beginning of some important changes that hopefully will continue to make New Orleans an even more amazing place to live.
Jen, so you came to do television in New Orleans. 2009, is my memory right on that? Or 8?
Would have been 2008. So when MSNBC moved me after Katrina, I didn't want to leave. And I started looking for opportunities to come back to New Orleans full time. And then that eventually led to the morning anchor spot at Fox 8.
So to see what you saw initially and then coming back, and I know you had visited a few times in between, that you could see that the city had started to make that move to come back. And I think that was a big part. I know you love the city, but just to see what the Saints meant to this region in 2009 to go on that run, win you a Super Bowl title. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, Steve and I hear it quite a bit about, oh, y'all talk too much about sports. Well, sports was a big part of the healing at that particular time. And I think it did bring everybody sort of together, that you could pull for one thing, and it really did come together.
I don't think you can overstate it enough, Mike, because, again, I'll go back to, and maybe because I was covering it from a different perspective, the MSNBC perspective, there were so many national lawmakers talking about, we don't need to rebuild New Orleans. This is going to happen again. Just let it go. And, of course, we know that people here were coming back into town, living in trailers, living in under FEMA tarps to start cleaning their property and getting things back together. But from a national debate perspective back then, there was a question mark about whether federal funds should be used to rebuild the city. And so the Saints, that game in the Dome where Steve Gleason blocked the punt, the famous play, that it was so much bigger and more than sports, because that sent a message beyond Louisiana, beyond the Gulf South, that we're not going anywhere. You can get on board or you can stay over there, but we're coming back whether you help or not. So it was tremendous. And then the Super Bowl, I think, just continued that. And what the Super Bowl did for the city was show how much it had recovered, because we know the locals here. We know what the national image is. It's Bourbon Street. It's drinking. It's partying. So many people don't realize New Orleans is so much more than that. I mean, I'm on the road so much, and I always get questions of, well, where would you actually live in New Orleans? Where would you send your kid to school? People just think all of New Orleans is Bourbon Street. And having that Super Bowl spotlight, all that programming, it was able to show the world how much New Orleans had come back, how special it was, how much people fought for it. And you know, no shade to Bourbon Street. I love the French Quarter. But how much more the city is than just that. So sports were huge in delivering the message worldwide.
And where I live at, people are like, you're just an hour away from New Orleans? It's like you live like three states down. I was like, no, I really don't. But it goes to show the different regions, and everybody's got a little bit different look to it. So my final question to you, come on, you got to use some of your luck now. You got to pull LSU out of victory in game one against Clemson. Come on. You got to push the chips in the middle of the table now eventually and win the opener. Jen, here's the crazy thing. You have not won an opener since Joe Burrow was quarterback in
exactly.
LSU in
We're
2019.
Overdue.
Oh, my
overdue.
God.
Overdue. And this is the year it happens. $18 million on this class. On this team, you know, the challenge is going to be having all that talent, all that new talent, great talent, but new talent come together and gel and work as a unit. But I think they're going to do it. They got to run the ball. They've got to run the ball. If that Clemson defensive front defense has one weakness, they do not defend the run well. They do everything else well. Also want to see Garrett Nussmeier. You know, Brian Kelly's, as coaches go, pretty forthcoming about injuries. He keeps saying Nussmeier's fine. I sure as heck hope so. But, you know, if your quarterback's not 100%, what do? You run the ball. You run the ball, you run the ball, you run the ball. And that has been, ironically, an Achilles heel for LSU as of late, despite, what, two decades of that being LSU's hallmark. Lately, it hasn't been. They've got to get back to that, and they've got to work as a team, that offensive line. When Nussmeier's throwing, they've got to step up. Those are your three keys.
Here's my deal. When you get four offensive linemen drafted for the first time in one draft class since 1943, you should have been able to run the football last year, and you couldn't when you needed to and had to. That's crazy. That's really a crazy deal for LSU. They were not a real physical team running the football last year at all.
No, not. And like I said, that's been the hallmark for so long, DBs and RBs. Got to get back to that to some extent. It's been a major point of emphasis for Brian Kelly. You got to have somewhat of a balanced attack. And like I said, if you're going to beat Clemson, you're going to have to do it. And I think the Tigers need a strong start, Mike, Steve, because you know what? The schedule doesn't get any easier.
Jen, always appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Do you know your week one assignment? Are you going to be doing Bucks versus Falcons?
I will not.
Not.
I'll be south, though. It'll be a draft day showdown. I've got Panthers and Jaguars.
All right, great. Thanks for joining us again. Appreciate the time. And
thank
always
you, Jen.
Appreciate
Thanks,
hearing
bye.
From you.
Bye.
Right. That is NFL on Fox reporter Jen Hale joining us right there. We're going to take a break. Be back with more sports talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Stay tuned right after this on WWL. Getting ready for LSU kicking off the season against Clemson. That's Saturday in South Carolina. You can start your game day 2 o'clock. Mike Dottilia and Herb Tyler at the Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. They're going to be at the Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge. Come out and count down to the big game at Acme. 16 surround sound TVs, best drink specials. Great place to hang out for LSU and college football. All thanks to the good folks at Map Construction. Then at 4:30. LSU's official pregame show and kickoff at 6:30 with the voice of the Tigers, Chris Blair, and color analyst Jacob Hester. Tiger versus Tiger, Saturday on WWL and streaming live on the free Odyssey app. Had a lot going on, Mike. Didn't even get into some of the LSU news today.
Yeah, and Tristan Keys, no shock to me, the wide receiver from Mississippi, either ranked either one or two on everybody's list for top prep receivers. Decommitted from LSU, has committed to Tennessee. If I'm Tennessee, I ain't holding my breath on that too till he signs something. But you could see Keys was looking around almost within a week after he commits. Why commit then? You know, why are you committing?
It's the game everyone plays now.
Man, I don't like that part. I'll be honest with you. If you're not sure, then don't commit to a school. That's the way I look at it.
Looking for the bigger payout.
Listen, I get that. And listen, I'm all for guys getting paid. But, man, the thing about you making a commitment, and then within the week, you traveling to Ole Miss and Tennessee. And
you always say it until there's, you know, pen to paper.
Until they sign it.
Right.
Keys has committed to Tennessee, but, you know, I tell my Tennessee fans, hey, he committed to LSU too.
Buyer beware.
Yeah, just be careful. No, he's a hell of a player now. He got built time skill set as a player, and he can really stretch the field. He's a big receiver, very talented young man. You could see why he was ranked where he was as far as high school prep talent's concerned as a receiver. But that's the only thing I don't like, Steve, is the commitment stuff. And then within 48 hours, you're going somewhere else. You can take the visits. I understand that. But,
yeah,
man, that part about it, you get as much money as you can. I understand that part. Me and Abear's good with that.
There's a little bit of honor behind it, though. You feel like when you're making a commitment to someone.
My thing is, if you're not real sure, then don't commit.
Yeah.
You know, it's that simple. You don't have to verbally commit. Also, too, on the Bayou, and one of Charlie and I's, top guests, and, man, we love to have him on, Tavon Sadler of Boog. He got a contract extension today from Nicholls State. He's the men's basketball coach there. First coach ever at Nicholls State, back-to-back 20-win seasons. Even my old buddy Don Landry didn't do that. And Boog was able to get a contract extension from through 2029, 2030. That was some people circling the wagons on Boog. Boog was a former Nicholls player, but he was also part of the recruiting kind of tangent to get the Crab Five, that Maryland basketball team. Yep. And one of those guys ended up as a Pelican. How about that? And so he gets to go to all the practices now. But, man, congratulations to Boog. Great recruiter. He's really turned into a fantastic coach out on the Bayou. And, I'm thrilled for him.
Other news, Mike, too. We're still waiting for any kind of word on what's going to happen with safety A.J. Halsey for Saturday's game. Coach Brian Kelly did just recently address the media and says that they're still waiting for clarification on his status from the NCAA, I'm guessing. But, got into a altercation, I guess you would say, in the final game of the season and was thrown out of the game for unsportsmanlike conduct. I think that's what it says in the box score. Yeah. And the rule is, though, if you're tossed for fighting, you have to miss the first half of the next game.
So we'll see.
Yeah, there's still no idea if Halsey's going to be in action for Saturday in the first half.
You wait this damn long to have that happen?
Yeah, Kelly said they got word on Wednesday about it.
What?
Yeah.
That goes to show you the NCAA should be broken into a million pieces. It takes them this long to come up with that? This sort of reminds me a little bit. This was years ago. Mason Smith got suspended for the first game because he was at a signing where he was autographing helmets and jerseys and stuff like that. And, you know, it wasn't sanctioned. My thing is this what you worried about?
Yep.
Is this what you worried about? Man, they the biggest bookie in the world, the NCAA. They stealing money.
They've done nothing for college athletics or college players. When you got to take ads out to tell you how good you are, and that's what the NCAA does, they take it out ads, man, they're just a bookie. They got their hand out for anything and everything. So, but, man, you can't wait till Wednesday of the game you're going to play to get word. Well, we're looking into the Hall. Well, the way they operate, they may hear back from them maybe in 4 weeks. I mean, you know, who knows with the NCAA, but to me, that's the one good thing to come out of all this NIL and transfer stuff. I would say in 5 years, the NCAA is going to be extinct.
Wow.
To me, good riddance. You've done nothing for the sport other than steal money away.
Going to take a break. When we get back, we'll be talking about Our City of Saints, a musical coming to the Jefferson Performing Arts Center. I think it'll be your interest with the anniversary, 20-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina upon us. We'll take a break here on Sports Talk. Be back with even more at the Treasure Chest Casino right after this on WWL. We're back here on Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino. Mike Dottiglia, Steve Geller hanging out with you till 7 o'clock as we get ready for the Brian Kelly Show coming up after that. Tigers taking on Clemson on Saturday. Right now, I want to get into a little bit of the creative arts, Mike D. Talking to Paul Saunier, creator of Our City of Saints musical. Paul, thanks so much for the time tonight.
Oh, I'm glad I'm here. Glad to have the opportunity to talk about this program.
Paul, kind of break us down into what exactly this is about. And I know it's a musical and that sort of thing, but kind of tell us the backdrop of how you came up or how this was kind of pieced together.
Yeah, Mike. I'm about 71 years old, so I'm old enough to remember going to Tulane Stadium. I've always been a Saints fan. Had season tickets the first year I was going to high school when they were $1.50 a game for end zone tickets. And also I write a lot of music. So, over the years, I've written different songs about living in the city, growing up in New Orleans. And then, like I said, I've always liked the Saints. So I wrote a song called I'm a Hoodat and a few other different songs. And then I started putting them together, linking them from the early days in Tulane Stadium. So I wrote a song about when you were in Tulane Stadium, you would stomp your feet on those metal stands. So there was a song about that. There's a song about All Saints Day, which is the day the Saints were born. And then, going through the days with John Meekum, there's a song called A Toy for a Texas Boy. And, going through the games and then getting through Katrina and then through the Super Bowl and so forth. But then, so I went to Jefferson Performing Arts thinking, let's put this together like in a musical concert and we could do some story lines between the songs. And they said, well, we'd really like the songs, but we'd really like to turn it more into a musical. So they hired Scarlett Lankin and Aileen LaBeouf to write the script and direct it. So it's evolved into a full musical with actors. There's about 15 people in the cast. Even Bobby Hebert makes an audio appearance in the program. And so it's turning out into a wonderful. Yeah.
The list
He is. He is the father of the Hoodat Nation. So
he is.
That's part of the thing. And, Mike, you were talking earlier about Katrina and about going back to the dome, about the unifying force of the Saints. And that's all in here. There's a song about a real emotional song about back home in the dome, coming back to that dome after Katrina. And, the game was just so inspiring. It was just, most people who have gone there said that was more inspiring than the Super Bowl because it was so personal to everybody. And we have a song like that. We have a song at the end called We Are One Town. Again, you were talking about the unifying factor of the Saints. And so that's how we end the musical on a song called We Are One Town. Rich, poor, black, white, Republican, Democrat. We can all agree on the Saints, especially when they're winning. It's something that brings everybody together.
Paul, you and I are old enough. Yeah. We saw some real lean years, okay? And I get it today is, man, you're not giving us a lot of confidence in what you're telling about saying something. Okay, I've been through this before. But that's like two generations that didn't see those early teams of the late 60s into the 70s. Maybe don't remember the Ditka time frame that well either. But, man, it does happen. We in the rebuild now. But that you were able to piece this together from start to finish, remarkable job. Really, really great job.
Yeah, and it's a span of about, 50 years from the 60s into, today, or to at least through the Super Bowl. And talking about the lean days, there is a song called The Dark Days of the Nation, put your ticket on the windshield, couldn't give it away, And I know another one, but to be close to you, is a song about Buddy D.
Oh, my God,
the
Buddy
D Parade called Dressing for Buddy D, which my brothers and I were in that, and it was such a good time. It's like New Orleans is so spontaneous. We had a week between winning that the conference championship, and we had that week in the next week's Super Bowl, and in a week we got 90,000 people in the street with men in dresses.
And Buddy would always tell me this. He was like, Mike, I'm gonna tell you this. I always said I'd put the dress on, but I know damn well I'm not gonna live long enough to put that dress on. So Bobby comes here year one, and they go to the NFC Championship game. He's like, Mike, something's wrong. Man, Buddy passed away. And come on, something's not right. I might have to do that the first year I'm here. I was like, okay. But Diliberto was right about it. I'm not going to live long enough that I'll have to put that dress on. But, to have all this together and to – I think what maybe we didn't appreciate was that 1-2 shot that we had with Sean Payton, Drew Brees. And we appreciate it now today, I think, a little bit more than when really they were there. You saw what they brought to the table and how it gave this team some ambiance that they had never had before, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly right, And, I do think one of the things I try to do in writing the songs is to reach people and connect with them. And I know that people living in New Orleans that love the Saints, love the city, there's something in almost every song that they will personally relate to and bring back memories that are real close to them. And that's just the way it is.
Paul, where and when can people go see Our City of Saints?
It's opening tomorrow night, Jefferson Performing Arts. We have shows Friday night, 7:30, Saturday night, 7:30, and a Sunday matinee at 2 p.m. So the tickets are online, jpas.org, or Ticketmaster.
Thanks so much for the time, Paul, and look forward to watching the show. Sounds great.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay. Thank you all for having me. Really love it. Love your show.
Thank you.
Paul Saunier, creator of Our City of Saints Music. You can go check it out at the Jefferson Arts Performing Center. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We'll be back to close out the 5 o'clock hour right after this on WWL. Wrapping up this hour of Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Coming up, pick six. We make our selections for college football. And then we'll also be joined by senior writer at Go247.com, Glenn West, for the latest on LSU. Top of the hour news coming up here on WWL. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this. Stay tuned on the big one, Big 870, 105.3 FM, WWL. Welcome back into weekend kickoff here at the Treasure Chest Casino. We are live till 7 p.m. this evening, and the Brian Kelly Show will be on shortly after. Gonna guess there's gonna be some fireworks there, Mike, before we get into our pick six segment. Pete Thamel covers the NCAA college football for ESPN. Putting out there that LSU safety A.J. Halsey will not play in the first half of the game against Clemson. ESPN found out from the NCAA in the last game of the 2024 season, Halsey was ejected from the contest, initially listed as unsportsmanlike conduct, but clarified post-game that game officials ejected the player for fighting, and fighting carries an automatic carryover penalty. Halsey is LSU's top safety and a key member of the secondary.
Okay, my thing about this is rules are rules, and whatever was set was
set. Sure.
But why do you wait so late to come down with that?
Somebody from Clemson must have put that in the NCAA's ear.
Yeah, just a little bit. And again, Whatever happened at Houston, and you got to pay the price.
Yep.
Well, my thing about it is to wait this late in the game to come down with it goes to show how dysfunctional they are. Again, I don't want to get on the tangent for
Like you said, it's like hopefully eventually the NCAA just becomes extinct.
In 5 years, they won't have that. You know, it'll be run by the major conferences itself because, again, something like this should have been clarified much, much quicker. And, Halsey's got to sit out the half. Then LSU's got to adjust. It's almost like having an injury, and he can't play in the first half. So you adjust to it. And so Deshaun Spears will play more along with Cooley. And we'll see how that works out for LSU in the secondary. But I do know one thing about AJ, and we've talked about it so many times in the interviews we've done from 4 to 6, and just about how good of a player AJ Halsey is. I mean, he's the intimidator in the secondary, plays the pass really well. He was a guy that walked on campus. Hey, I got this job. Yeah, the rest of y'all can watch because I'm the starter here. But to lose him for a half is certainly a big loss, certainly on who you're playing to.
And hopefully he's going to come out second half with his hair on fire. You always hear.
You ain't got to worry about that with Halsey. Anytime he steps on the field, he's ready to play, and he's a big-time player. So that is a major loss for LSU not to have him for the first half against Clemson.
Well, speaking of that game, LSU at Clemson, you can hear that Saturday, 6:30, right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Time to bring back our favorite segment, one of our favorite segment, guys, in Pick 6, where we pick 6 games from the college and NFL season. The NFL not starting until next weekend, so we got 6 college games to get to that Charlie's picked out.
Bobby's like, Mike, I just hope I get to 500. You and Charlie do, but I don't. That's 2 years in a row. I don't even hit 500 on this.
I was just happy I finished ahead of Hebert last year.
Okay, Steve, that ain't no great accomplishment. I'm going to be honest with you. It's not like you scaled Mount Everest to do that one.
Charlie, what we got on the slate this week?
Guys, we're going to go in chronological order. It's a loaded week one of the college football season. Mike, you and I talked a lot about it yesterday, and we're just going to go step by step. Probably the most highly anticipated week one game, maybe of all time. Number one, Texas at number 3, Ohio State. Ohio State 1.5-point favorites in this one, guys. It's the defending champs from last year.
I'm going to go with Texas. I think they have the edge at quarterback. I know this is on Ohio State's home turf, but man, do we know anything about Ohio State's quarterback? I know he was a 5-star guy, went to Alabama. But what happened afterwards? You know, it's unreal. It really is unreal. I'm going to go with Texas here. I think they upset Ohio State. Very close game, but I'm going to go with the Longhorns.
I'm with you here, Mike, getting Texas with the 1.5 points. Ohio State lost 14 players to the NFL draft.
17 total. 14 drafted, 3 undrafted free agents. Man, listen.
And the 4 first-rounders.
My thing is, I would rather play them here than first week in November.
Bingo.
Because they are going to be, I think, pretty doggone good once they get a little experience.
And, Mike, that's exactly why I'm going with Texas as well. This is a clean sweep, guys. How about Texas plus 1.5 at Ohio State? We'll see if Arch Manning and the Longhorns, Steve Sarkisian, can kind of pull it off in that opener. Up next, guys, we got number 8, Alabama, 13.5-point favorites at Florida State. Mike, you and I talked a little bit about this one yesterday. I'm sticking with my guns on this one. Florida State was just a complete disaster last year. I think you said they brought in 50 new players. Look, Alabama, their roster, the question mark is the quarterback, Ty Simpson. But give me Alabama and a big win at Florida State, covering 13.5. I think they win by at least 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I agree with you, Charlie. This, of all the picks you showed me, this was the easiest one for me. I think Alabama, they dominate up front, offensive, defensive line. And I don't know a lot about Ty other than we got to talk to him, and he was a really nice guy.
Absolutely.
But man, watching him, he reminds me so much of Nussmeier of a year ago. That's who he looks like to me. So let's see if he can do that out on the field, but I like Alabama.
We're starting a little boring here, guys. A clean sweep again. I'm going with Bama as well. Just the Crimson Tide have a stout defense, plenty of starters returning there, and Seminoles offense kind of been pieced together with a lot of transfers there, so a ton of questions. Roll Tide, I'll give that 13.5.
Just a bunch of SEC homers over here, guys. Anyways, we're moving on. The Big Ten traveling to Tulane. We got Northwestern going to Yulman Stadium to face off against the Green Wave. Tulane and Coach Summerall, 6-point favorites in this one. And listen, Coach Sharma can talk up Northwestern as a Big Ten opponent coming to town. But at the same time, I have high, high expectations for this Green Wave squad. You know, we keep talking about their defense, their new quarterback situation. I think they're going to be awesome this year. Tulane picks up an impressive victory in week one. They cover the 6-point spread, in my opinion.
I'll wear them down early running the ball and let them feel that heat of South Louisiana. It gets hot in Chicago, but not this type of humidity. I like the Green Wave here.
Another one, clean sweep again, guys. I saw this. Northwestern is 3-8 against the spread their last 11 games. Tulane 7-3 against the spread in their previous 10. They've beaten that number, Tulane, in 8 straight showings, week one. So, yeah, roll Wave. I'll give the 6.
And we're going chronological order here, guys. So this is the biggest game on this list for our listeners, but it's not the last one. We have 2 more on Sunday that we'll get to in just a second. Number 9, LSU at number 4, Clemson. Clemson, 4-point favorites as LSU desperately tries to end that 5-game losing skid in season opening matchups. And guys, you know, hearing Jen talk about it, we've talked to a bunch of different reporters. Chris Lowe, I remember, gave a great preview. Pete Jenkins was one of my favorite, you know, interviews about Clemson. He said he went to go work at Clemson, and the one thing that stood out to him was that they aren't an SEC program, but they basically are an SEC program. And he was so impressed with how they, quote unquote, play with their hairs on fire. Guys, I don't like the matchup. I'm going to be honest with you. I like LSU this season. I think they'll still have a great year. But I'm with Tim Brando on this one. Give me Clemson -4 at their Death Valley in this matchup.
I'm going to go with Clemson also. I think had it been 4.5, I may have went LSU.
Really?
But I'm going to go with Clemson here. I just think Clemson is a tad better, and they at home.
Right.
And then the news coming today. No Halsey for a half. Yikes. You know what? I got to go with Clemson here.
I'm boring again, guys. I'm sticking with you. Clean sweep again. I got that front four Clemson. I'm kind of scared to see what happens against this LSU O-line. You know, a lot different this year, losing so many guys from last year's team. And I just need to see it before I can believe it from the Bayou Bengals. I'll take Clemson -4.
I hope I'm wrong on this pick.
Yeah.
I really do, but I got to go with the home team.
I'm just a little bit worried, guys, because it's a great point that Clemson's run defense isn't awesome, but LSU's rushing attack hasn't been good either under OC Joe Sloan. So, you know, I think that if you ask Nussmeier to throw, you know, 40 times in this game, that's kind of playing into what Clemson wants to do with that stout defensive front that can get after the passer. So it's just the matchup worries me. I'll go Clemson -4 here. Moving on to the Sunday games, guys, we got Virginia Tech at number 13, South Carolina. Mike, once again, this is a guy that we had talked about yesterday. Lenoris Sellers in his debut in 2025. He is such an impressive guy. I mean, if you're talking about the top quarterbacks entering this upcoming draft, everyone should be looking at Lenoris Sellers' tape because he's going to be awesome this year. Give me South Carolina and a big victory over Virginia Tech out of the ACC, covering that 8-point spread. I think they win by at least 10.
Yeah, Frank Bima ain't coaching there no more. I'm a big Sellers fan. I think he's got a chance to really tilt the field this year offensively. They lost a lot on defense, though.
Yeah.
Man, they lost a lot to the NFL on defense. But I like South Carolina here. I just think Sellers is such a playmaker on offense.
We finally have a difference, gentlemen. I'm going to go with Virginia Tech here. I think their defense can keep Sellers in South Carolina at least in check. I do think the Gamecocks will win the game, but I don't like giving that 8 points, so give me the Hokies getting that 8 number.
Okay, give me an offensive player for Virginia Tech. I'm going to sit here and wait for you, Steve. I'm just messing with you.
I hear you. I know what you mean. But I just think this will end up being a closer game than the 8-point spread.
And then, guys, we got the nightcap on Sunday, the third top 10 weekend matchup. We got number 6 Notre Dame, 2.5-point favorites on the road at number 10 Miami. You know, I love Coach O, but I will be going with Notre Dame here, -2.5. You know, Mike, we had talked about the running back at Notre Dame, Jeremiah Love, how he's a legit prospect in next year's draft as well. And they don't have the most, I guess, sustainable quarterback situation necessarily, but they got a good offensive line. They got a good running back. They got good weapons in the passing attack as well. And I don't know. I trust Notre Dame's defense led by Coach Freeman.
Yeah, I'm right with you with the Notre Dame's defense. They got 7 starters back. I don't think Miami's defense being that improved this year on stopping that Irish rushing attack. So I'll take the Notre Dame to cover.
Marcus Freeman and the Irish. I'm going to make it a
just
sweep.
One difference. That was me taking Virginia Tech.
But, man, if they had a quarterback, and Charlie knew, I said this before. I told this before Brando came on. when we had him. They had a guy that I thought could turn the engine over on the car all season long. They would have been my pick as national champs.
Wow.
So I'll go with the Irish.
Yeah, I think that's a clean sweep again, guys. Five of six clean sweeps for the three of us in the opening week of the college
either all going to be right or all going to be wrong, so to speak.
Yeah.
But Carson Beck is, to me, the intrigue guy. Is he the Carson Beck we saw 2 years ago, or the Carson Beck we saw a year ago where he was El Stinko in some games? He wasn't very good at all. I don't know. Maybe they can catch magic in a bottle. You know, they had Cam Ward. Will Beck be that guy? But their defense last year was awful.
Taking a break now on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll dip more into the LSU versus Clemson big game on Saturday. Senior writer at go247.com, Glenn West, will join us after the break. Stay tuned on Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino. We're back here at the Treasure Chest Casino inside the Game Bar and Grill, getting ready for the Brian Kelly Show coming up at 7 o'clock here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Happy to welcome in Glenn West, senior writer at Go247 Sports right now, joining us. Glenn, just another day covering them LSU Tigers. How you been, man?
Oh, it's been a lot of catching up work, guys. Just a lot of following, a lot of text messages. Not only LSU with this AJ Halsey situation, but you also lose a commitment from a five-star recruit today as well. So you're never lacking for business here when you get close to the regular season for the Tigers.
Yeah, I was telling Steve, always say this when, they have the commitments. Man, I don't believe no verbal commitment till he signs. Because, especially from an out-of-state player. And, Coach O would tell me that all the time. Man, it's difficult. A lot of times these guys, they have a great visit and they'll commit to you. And then a couple of days later, they're visiting. That's exactly what happened with Keys. He commits to LSU, and then, I'm going to Ole Miss. I'm going to visit there. And then he goes to Tennessee. And listen, in America, you can do what you want to do with that commitment. But my thing about it is, if you're not sure, for sure, then don't commit. Nobody's forcing you to commit. Nobody's forcing you.
You still got 5 months before signing day, so who knows what can change between now and then, too. There's still an ocean of time here. But, look, ever since Tristan Keys committed to LSU, and this was way back now, I guess, in the spring when he was on visits and things of that nature, there was always this lingering threat of Tennessee, and they were always the team that was just waiting to kind of maybe throw their godfather offer at him or whatever it was. To get him on board with the number one quarterback in their class, which is Faison Brandon. And those two guys have a really tight relationship. And so we were monitoring it, throughout the entire summer, and you just kept hearing Tennessee. But LSU felt good, about their recruitment of him. And I don't think they're slamming the door shut on that recruitment, just as Tennessee never shut the door when he was committed to them. This is just the time that we're living in when, one program ups their offer, ups what they're selling, and we'll see what LSU has to counter with, or if they decide to go in another couple directions with some really good receivers that are still out there that they can potentially flip to their program as well.
As Don King would say, only in America, right? That story on Keys is not going to be closed. Believe me, I think they'll have a couple more chapters left to write on that. But losing A.J. Halsey for the first half is certainly big. A.J. was a guy that, man, he walked on campus. I'm the man at safety. Okay. All you other guys are watching. So that would certainly, to me, mean that Spears is going to play a bigger part, especially in the first half.
Yeah. No, I agree completely. I think Deshaun Spears and Jordan Gilbert are the two names that you need to really kind of pay attention closely to in the first half of that game. We know it's Marcus Cooley is going to be one of the starting safeties. He and Halsey had been sharing pretty much 100% of the reps at the two safety spots for most of fall camp. And look, this Halsey thing really came out of left field. And the way you know that is that LSU didn't find about it until Wednesday. And that is really stunning to me that they went the entire offseason without knowing this was going to happen or that this was even a possibility. So we'll see kind of what happens in terms of the game. But, this is a pretty massive blow for LSU in losing a guy in A.J. Halsey who kind of was brought in to be that leader of the secondary. He was brought in because he's going to be that center fielder for LSU for most of the season, a guy who can come up and make short tackles. I mean, that's something LSU has not really had these last couple of years, is a guy who can just come up and make those plays and prevent explosive plays from happening. He's a playmaker. He was top 10 in the country last year in interceptions and turnovers created. So this is a guy that LSU was going to pour a lot of energy into, making sure that he was going to be that guy to lead the secondary. And very unfortunate that you won't have him for this first half of this top five matchup. But at the same time, I will say LSU built this roster from a perspective that they would have the depth to handle situations like this. Not exactly like this, but situations like this where a player might be out for a period of a game or a couple game stretch, that they have the depth behind that player to be able to pick them up and continue to right the ship without them. So we're going to figure out a lot more about that safety depth here in the first half against Clemson and just how those guys are able to hold up.
Clemson making changes on defense with the defensive coordinator last year. We saw they gave up a lot of passes over the top, especially in the middle of the field. And teams running the ball on them, gashing them at times. And they were catching, you know, Parker, you know, he's a great pass rusher. And so the one thing to kind of thwart that is to run right at him. And a lot of times it looked as though, you know, hey, man, my genius is to get up and sack the quarterback. You know, I'll play that run at another time. And now they bring in Tom Allen. And Tom recruited in this area for Indiana when he was the head coach. And then he got fired there. He goes to Penn State. I thought he did a really good job. They were a much more physical team on defense last year. He was the linebackers coach there. What would you expect different? They did go out in the portal and get that big guy from Purdue, but they bring back a lot of starters from a year ago, and in particular, Peter Woods, who I think is the best interior defensive lineman in college football.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head there in terms of what they were trying to accomplish by bringing Tom Allen in to be their defensive coordinator. Just doing research in the weeks and the week leading up to this game, you gotta cover all your bases. And Tom Allen was a guy at Penn State last year. They were a top 10 rush defense in the country, and so they're bringing in a guy who is very well, accumulated to having a really good rush defense and being able to stop guys from or stop opponents from having big games on the ground. And that was a huge emphasis for Clemson this offseason, just in talking with a couple of reporters that are close to that team and cover it on a daily basis. And so they feel better about their defensive chances this year, especially up front with their defensive line and that trio of Parker, Woods, and Will Help, the Purdue transfer. That's going to be a real tough matchup for LSU's offensive line, and that's really where I think the crux of this game comes into play for me. It's just, how does this new makeshift offensive line, the guys that they've replaced, five starters now with, I don't expect DJ Chester to be in that lineup to start the game on Saturday, so it'll be five new guys. How they've been able to bring those players along here over the last couple weeks is going to tell a lot of this story, I think, in terms of how efficient LSU's offense can be. And if they can take advantage of maybe some of the deficiencies that Clemson showed last year on the ground with Caden Durham and those guys.
Glenn, this is definitely one of the premier matchups in college football to start the season. And I saw that there's going to be 35 scouts, five GMs at the LSU-Clemson game. I imagine a lot of those eyes are going to be watching the quarterbacks.
Yeah, no doubt. Nussmeier and Klubnik, those are going to be the two jerseys that I think you're watching if you're a scout for these NFL teams. But look, there's a lot of talent between both teams. I mean, like you mentioned, you got the Peter Woods, TJ Parker duo. Those are two potential first-round picks. We'll see what guys like Whit Weeks, Harold Perkins, maybe a couple of these receivers like Berrion Brown or Nick Anderson or Chris Hilton, some of these LSU receivers, or what they can do to help their cases. And I think there's a lot of NFL draft talent that's going to be on the field on Saturday. And, you know, it's like knocking out 20 birds with one stone by hitting one game and getting all these different guys on the field at the same time. So we're expecting a heavyweight matchup here between two teams that obviously have playoff aspirations, and really looking forward to getting over there and covering this one. This is going to be a very fun opener.
Glenn, I think one of the things that LSU lacked last year, for the most part, because of the injury to Chris Hilton, and he missed so much playing time early, and then when he came back,
man, it wasn't quite right for him, and he caught the ire of Coach Kelly a couple of times. But then late in the year, you saw his impact and his ability to stretch the field. And if I'm LSU, I don't know if it's play one or two or three, but I'm throwing the ball deep. I'm going to test you secondary-wise, especially at safety, because that's one area they had some difficulties last year, Clemson, in the deep part of the game. I'm going to test you. And the other thing is you're not going to be able to play that safety up front. You're not going to be able to have him up on the line of scrimmage. Once I throw that ball deep, I don't care if I miss or not. I'm going to get you out of having that safety in the box.
Yeah, I'd definitely be okay with a deep shot early in this game. I do think a part of the game plan LSU's going to have to maybe experiment with is getting the ball out very quickly to kind of maybe give this offensive line a chance in this game. Like, I think that they have enough playmakers, six, seven, eight guys that I can think of right off the top of my head who can contribute in this offense in a productive and positive way that they can get the ball out to and let those guys make plays. But there's no doubt that this offense needed to be more vertical last year, and not just missing Chris Hilton, but adding a guy like Berrion Brown to the mix, who can also be kind of that deep threat player for you. Xavion Thomas, I think, has really improved in his second year in the system to be more of a vertical threat for LSU this year as well. So they have a number of different options that they can go vertical with. Nick Anderson, the Oklahoma transfer, is another guy that I think has some untapped potential in that regard as well. So they're gonna spread them out. I think they're gonna really get a lot of these receivers, a lot of these tight ends involved in the game plan, and it's kind of a pick your poison kind of deal. If they're able to protect Nussmeier and he's able to get the ball out in time to get those playmakers in space to make something happen.
Glenn, one of the things I think early in the season you see a lot more is that special teams. And I know Brian Kelly's preached about it every year since he's been here about special team emphasis. And yet early in the season it hadn't been good. It's one kind of screw up after another, and you fix one thing and the other domino hits and it's not good somewhere else. But legitimately this year, in bringing in Berrion Brown, and you already have Thomas, and Aaron Anderson certainly can help you there too. The return game, and Rojas, he's almost like a guy that's been at your company so long he's vested because he seemingly has been there for so long. The punter's got some experience, Crenshaw, kicking, but, he hasn't really set the world afire. Somebody's going to make a play here on special teams in the return game, in the coverage units, that I think is going to be the difference here. Maybe for the first time in Brian Kelly's career at LSU, I think that could be, and I say could be, a strong point for this team.
No, I agree completely, and I think the return game is where I kind of centralized my focus in the special teams department because you mentioned it. I mean, between Anderson and Xavion Thomas and, of course, now Berrion Brown coming in from Kentucky, they have some really elite weapons there to return and make this, flip the field a couple times and really kind of give LSU some momentum throughout the course of the game. And I think the one thing that really stands out to me is that they've had buy-in from a lot of the veteran, like, top-tier starter guys that you feel like are going to play heavy roles on the defensive side of the ball and also on offense too. But when we've gone out there for special teams drills and stuff, you're seeing guys like Monster Delane, you're seeing guys like Jack Pyburn, like A.J. Halsey even, Tamarcus Cooley, guys who are going to be big-time players on this team on the field on defense and on offense, really kind of take to that special teams unit and kind of help them in terms of their coverage formations and things of that nature to kind of help spark those guys loose a little bit more consistently. So I think that's been a major emphasis. They brought in a guy named Amon Anand in the offseason to really kind of help them with their return game. He's worked a lot with special teams in his past and his career, and they've really taken to that, I think. And the return game is going to be something that will be very interesting for me to watch on Saturday because when you're going into a hostile environment with a place like Clemson, really anything to get your momentum on your side is what you want to try to accomplish. And certainly on the special teams portion, having a big return or two is definitely what you want to see out of that group.
You want to keep up with the LSU Tigers, make sure you go to go247.com. Glenn, thanks so much for the time. I know it's been a heck of a day for you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Glenn.
Glenn West, senior writer at go247.com. You can follow him at Twitter as well, at GlennWest21. Taking a break on Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. We shall return right after this on WWL. Welcome back into the Treasure Chest Casino here on Sports Talk. And, man, nothing like being at a casino with a sports book during football season. Been a lot of hooting and hollering going on as these games been starting out in college football today.
Yeah, and one of the surprises, we were talking about this before the game, South Florida and Boise State. Boise State was ranked one of the top teams, you know, and a team that, along with Tulane, could possibly get into the top 12. And it is the second quarter. They are waiting for the extra point. But South Florida's jumped on them 16-7, waiting for the extra point. Man, how about South Florida in this game? Man, they not weren't intimidated by Boise State. And my thing is, hey, heat them up. Boise State ain't used to that heat. Man, keep the ball. Keep running it and running it and running it and wear them down.
Kind of like you said for Tulane.
That's what I would do against Northwestern. And I think, hey, I know you practice in the heat and everything else, but, man, that it catches you. It does catch you. Man, that's something. But, you know, South Florida, again, not intimidated by the preseason ranking of Boise State, and you could see offensively, and watching what I've been able to see, Boise State's really struggling on offense at all. At quarterbacks, he's all over the board throwing the football, and, you know, South Florida's been able to make some big plays on offense.
Well, LSU season opener Saturday, folks, at Clemson. How do the Tigers and the Tigers match up? And what's the strategy for the purple and gold to pull off that upset? Don't miss head coach Brian Kelly and the voice of the Tigers, Chris Blair. That'll be tonight at 7 on your home for LSU football, WWL.
He ain't telling you.
Free Odyssey app. We'll be back to close things out at the Treasure Chest Casino right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Closing things down here at the Treasure Chest Casino for Sports Talk. Then coming up right after us is the Brian Kelly Show on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Want to let everyone know, don't miss our WWL special, Katrina, 20 years later, featuring untold stories from Neil Norman, Bobby Hebert, Deuce McAllister, Garland Robinette, Tommy Tucker, Mike Haas, Don Dubuque, plus Dave Cone with Diane Newman tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Then again Sunday, 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. That's all on WWLAMFM.com and the free Odyssey app. Man, oh, man, I can't wait.
And we got a full house hit tonight.
Right, like I said, football season's back. We got the sports book booming over here in the bar area. The TV's going. I can only imagine the lounge chairs over there are packed and filled right now.
All I know is they got a lot of people that took South Florida. Man, we hear it every time the Bulls make a play, man. I don't even have to look up. I can hear it. So, big one right off the bat. And we want to thank everybody for showing up over here. Come and watch us, and also watching the games here at the Treasure Chest.
They must be reading those that story in the Advocate.
Yeah, that was a great story, and man, it goes to show, you know, a lot of times they got people against gambling. I understand that part. If you don't want to take part, don't take part in it. But what it meant to the city of Kenner to have it here, great, unbelievable facilities. Park in here, walk around. They got everything for you here. And even if you don't want to gamble.
It's a great sports bar.
Yeah, great sports bar to come watch the games and everything else. And the food
the
here
steakhouse.
Steakhouse. The food here is terrific. We saw City Champ over here. Ricky Jackson was here. They're honoring him tonight. And so congratulations to City Champ. It was great to see him again. He looks good. Looking good, City Champ. So, awesome. Want to thank everybody here for showing up tonight, too.
Looking forward to hearing more from you, Mike and Herb Tyler, on Saturday. Have a great night, everyone. Talk to you later.